And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, May 29th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Take one of our posts, send it out to your friends. We want everybody to get involved. We got a lot going on the show today. NBA Finals has the Celtics waiting for the West winner. The Yankees are playing great. The Mets aren't. We got some sad NBA and golf news to go through. We're going to start it with the Rangers. They continue their road to the Stanley Cup Finals. They're halfway there. They have two of the four wins they need to get to the finals. They lost the first game 3-0. They won the second game 2-1 in overtime. They won the third game 5-4 in overtime. And they lost the fourth game 3-2 in overtime. Three straight overtime games. Darren, started off with the New York Rangers.
Well, it's been, to be honest, it's been a really entertaining series. If you're watching it, Florida's been the better side for the majority of most of these games. Last night in game four, the Rangers kind of controlled period one, and it seemed like Florida tilted the ice 2-3. And if you count the minute and a half to 2 minutes of overtime that we played. But Igor has been unbelievable in between the pipes, and that has been the difference in the neutral. He's neutralized it. The one thing that you could say is, listen, Florida's always going to be a little bit more aggressive. They forecheck like crazy. They're going to take more shots than their opponents. They're going to get more chances than their opponents. So it's not like I feel like, even though they love to show the stat of how many shots attempted and all that type of stuff, it's a little misleading for the way these two styles play. The reason why, to me, why the Rangers lost game four, honestly, G, is they could not win a faceoff. They lost in the faceoff circle last night. They could not control the faceoff, and they would be stuck in their zone for two and a half minutes at a clip. At least twice that happened. That's beyond what you can fathom for a team that's supposed to be that good, with a guy like Barkley Goodrow, who, by the way, had one goal in his first 71 games of the season, scored three in his last nine, and has scored six in the playoffs. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, how some of this stuff happens. But when you break it down, Igor's been better than Bob, I think. But at the same time, Florida has been a little bit more consistent up front. Kev, thoughts?
Yeah, I think the Rangers are lucky to be 2-2. I think especially with game three. To me, game three really turned on that shorthanded goal. You know, when the Trouba got the double minor. And
should have been a major.
Even I,
it's an elbow to the head of an unprotected player. That's gotta, and listen, I'm rooting for the Rangers. You two aren't. I think that's a major.
I could see it saying that maybe it glanced off the shoulder into the head. I mean, you know, and like I said, I first glanced, I'm like, that's a major, throw him out of the game, you know, but on the replay, I was like, I didn't think it was as bad as, you know, I don't know. But anyway, it was still a double minor. And, you know, the Rangers score shorthanded. And
I wouldn't call that luck, though. A lot of people saying luck. Yeah, that's not luck. That was a great play.
Oh, that is, no doubt about it.
You said they're lucky to be 2-2.
I think they were lucky to be 2-2 because I thought the rest of the game, Florida game three, dominated a lot of that. Third period, they were all over the Rangers. And I think even into overtime, they really controlled a lot of the play, I thought, in overtime. And the Rangers were able to get the goal. You know, like I said, Shesterkin's been the difference in the series, no doubt about it.
I think that I actually agree with Kev. I actually do think that they're lucky to be at 2-2 right now, Darren. The last two games, if you're a Rangers fan, the last two games can't be giving you a lot of good psyche thinking about it. You know, in game three, they're outshot 37-23, and in game four, they're outshot 40-23. They've only had 23 shots the last two games. If you're a Ranger fan, that can't be a good thing that you're thinking about. And I know you got to win in game three. And the only reason you got to win in game three is because Shesterkin was just unreal for a whole period. And when it comes down to how Florida is playing them, this is how they're going to play them. You know, game three to be outshot 14 shots, game four to be outshot 17 shots. I mean, at some point, this is going to come back. Now, game two, when the Rangers actually won 5-4 in overtime, they outshot them 30-27. And in game one, Florida outshot them 27-24, but at least the shots were close. There was this to and fro to the action where sometimes the play was down the Rangers' end, sometimes the play was down Florida's end. But in game three and four, I didn't see that. I didn't see that for a lot of the third period, specifically in both of those games. What, Darren, what do you think? I mean,
I saw a lot in the second period either, to be honest with you. I mean, but, you hear a lot of people say, oh, they've had lucky bounces, this, that, and the other thing. No. And I sit there and I go back to last night, and I'm going to be honest. Verhaeghe's goal was about the luckiest bounce I've seen the entire tournament. I mean, that puck hits off, Lindgren's helmet, comes back, and he swings out of it in midair. Beautiful goal. Nothing you can take away, but nothing Shesterkin can do. The overtime game winner was just great passing. There was really nothing Shesterkin can do. I think he's been standing on his head. The fact of the matter is that the Rangers are not going to play as aggressively as Florida. They're not getting out of the zone quickly enough is the biggest problem. They're having trouble clearing the zone. They need better passing. They need to do a better job overall of – setting themselves up and advancing the offense and holding control. The first line is invisible, okay? The reason they're not dominating or not even being close to even being even in play is because they're getting nothing out of Kreider. They're getting nothing out of Zibanejad. And when they get one assist so far out of Panarin, that's it. Got 0-0-1 through four games. This is your top scoring line. This is the guy that had the natural hat trick to beat Carolina on the road. This is the guy that's done a million things in Panarin that helped them lead the way and make things a great all season. Zibanejad had 14 points in the first two rounds, has 0 points in this round. So that's what it comes down to, is if they can't get the first line going, they will not win the series. If the first line kind of comes up, because Lafreniere, say what you want about game three, the best player on the ice was Lafreniere. Even though Florida dominated the game, Lafreniere was the best player on the ice. His two goals were both unreal, and every time he touched the puck, it seemed electric. It was almost like when Barzal first came up for the Isles, and every time he'd get the puck in the offensive zone, you expected something exciting to happen. That's what Lafreniere is in this series for the Rangers. They're just not getting it from the top guys, G.
Listen, that being said, okay, it's 2-2. The Rangers have two of the next three at home. I don't expect the Rangers to lose games 5 and 6. I expect this to go 7. So, there is no way I'm telling you I think that the tables have completely turned on the Rangers. It's just at this moment at 2-2, and I've said this for a lot of years to a lot of people, and that is most of these overtime goals in the playoffs that are scored are usually not great goals. You have some of them, but most of the goals in overtime are just not great goals because these guys have played everything they can for the first 60 minutes. They come out there for that fourth period, and half these guys are shot to begin with, and you have mistakes made. You have people not getting back on defense, and you have some mistakes that are made. And listen, this isn't a new thing. We've been saying this for a long time, but most of these goals in overtime are not great goals.
Now, Wenberg certainly was not. It just hit him.
Right.
That was like his first goal in forever, basically. Last night's goal, though, I thought was beautiful passing and a great overtime winner.
I thought it was power play passing, too. It's not the power play.
But it was power play. Yeah, there's a man down.
But so, I tell you, watching the Ranger penalty kill, I mean, you can see why they scored, five or six shorthanded goals this playoffs?
Yeah.
I mean, they're all over them. I mean, it took beautiful passing by Florida to set up the goal. I thought for the first 30 or 40 seconds of that penalty kill, I thought the Rangers got to actually steal it and come down and score the shorty to win the game.
They could have easily, it looked like.
I mean, they
the problem that they faced in the whole third period, Kev, last night was that they could not win a defensive zone faceoff.
Yeah.
And Goodrow was out there to do it, and that's why he's on this team. They brought in Wheeler, who committed the penalty, but it really wasn't his fault. Zibanejad set him up poorly. Zibanejad screwed him. Wheeler had him played in like 3 months, and then all of a sudden that happens. But, again, with a best of three right now, and anything can happen. G?
And I got one other point to make, and that is Sunday I watched the game with my cousin and big Ranger fan, and he made a point about getting Rempe more involved, and I basically shot him down and said, Rempe for this series is a two-bit player, and he just is not going to see enough ice time to make a difference. The games that you need are from that top line. That's who you need the games from for them to really win these games. And whether Rempe's on the ice for 2 minutes or 10 minutes, to me, he's probably not going to make a difference in the long run. But he made a point that we need him out there more and they're not playing him enough. So I just wanted to give that a little shout out to that conversation. Darren?
Go ahead. Get Kev first.
I was going to say 10 minutes of Rempe is perfect in this series. I think because Florida plays a forechecking physical style, you need some physicality to back, you know, to go back at Florida. And I think this series works for Rempe because of that. I think if they do go advanced, and let's just say it's Edmonton, who's got a little bit more skill, who you don't think of as being quite as physical as Florida, then I don't think Rempe really plays much. But I think this Florida series is a perfect time to get Rempe. Yes, it's only going to be 8 to 10 minutes, but you need that physicality against this Florida team.
I just don't think
the other night he played 4 minutes. The other night he played 4 minutes, and that's the problem. Yeah, you're already down VC. 10. You're already down VC. You need that. You can't sit there and in the third period really be down two forwards. You can't do it. You have to. He has to get a couple more minutes than he's getting. Yeah. I agree with Kev a little bit more. To me, when you watch these players and when they get to the West in a second, Dallas, Florida, and the Rangers are all very, very comparable. Edmonton's the outlier team. Not saying they're worse or better. They're just a different style. These other three teams are physical. They're quick, and they're gonna rely on goaltending, and they're gonna rely on being in the right place at the right time. Edmonton's gonna bank on outgunning you. Okay, that's gonna be the difference between these three teams and that one team standing there. And a guy like Rempe in one of these physical series, just to make a quick presence. They win when he plays. I mean, their record is ridiculous when he plays. No matter if he has any part of the game or not. For some strange reason, he's been almost like a lucky charm. But the second thing is, like you said, Kev, when Cousins wants to get a little bit nasty, and, you know, Rempe goes down pretty easy for a guy that's 6'8". You see him get checked, he falls a lot. But at the same point in time, if he does catch you, he will hurt you. And I think that that's where the difference lies. I don't think he's like you're saying, both of you are saying, I don't think he's a 15-minute, 16-minute guy. No. I think I'd love to see between 8 and 11. And I think I'd be happy that he had two games so far where he played under 4 or under 5. And it's like you need a little bit more out of him because you get tired legs, especially in these overtimes. Every game's going overtime.
Yeah.
You know, you need that little extra help. I still think the Rangers find a way in 7. I know both of you guys picked Florida, I think, in 7, right? So I think we all had it as a 7-game series.
I have them 7, yep.
I didn't. I had it in 6.
Yep. And you had Florida in 6. I had the Rangers in 7, and Kev had Florida. So we're all still alive. We'll see who's right. The only thing that would go wrong is if the Rangers win in 6. Then I'll be happy and you guys won't be, and none of us will be right.
All right. Out West, Dallas
leads. Yeah, Dallas Edmonton's been a hell of a series, man.
Yeah. Dallas leads 2-1. They are at the first intermission of game 4, tied at 2-2 at the moment. It's been a kind of a back and forth. Edmonton won the first game in double overtime. Dallas has come back with 2 straight wins. Darren?
Yeah, you watch this. I mean, McDavid actually lit the lamp, finally and got things going. He didn't have a great series against Vancouver, to win game 1. Seguin had scored both goals for Dallas to kind of get him to fight back in that first game, but wasn't enough. But you hadn't seen a lot of Seguin, so that was pretty good. Dallas won game 2, was tied 1-1, and Edmonton's been coming out most of these games. Tonight a little bit, but they outshot them 16-4 in period 1 in game 2. They really ripped them to shreds a little bit. But then Dallas got the Marchman goal in early in the third period, take a 2-1 lead. They ended the empty net at 3-1. Both of those games, Skinner played well, okay, as much as I've been picking on Stuart Skinner. Then game 3 came, and there was Stuart Skinner. That's the guy I was looking for. They jumped on him early, Edmonton. They scored early, and then the Stars stormed back. Hat trick for Robertson, who hadn't scored in 10 games, and he's one of their goal scorers, so it was good for them to get him back. Skinner reverts back to form, giving up 4 goals on 20 shots or 22 shots, something like that, and now Dallas has won 4 in a row on the road. And they're 7-1 in the playoffs on the road right now. They've been outstanding. So Edmonton in this game obviously needs this. They can't afford to fall down 3-1 heading back to Dallas. So this is a must-win for Edmonton. Dallas scored 2 goals real quick. I didn't even see them. Geno saw them both. I didn't even see them. Edmonton tied it up, though, here in the second half of the period to make it a game. And we'll see what we have. Again, this is more contrasting styles. Florida and the Rangers are both going to play the same way. Great goaltending, physicality, speed. Florida, better forechecking team. The Rangers, a little bit better, I would say, is a defensive squad. I would trust their defense over Florida's. I would trust Florida's forecheck over the Rangers. This one is just a tale of two cities. This is, you know, really good, balanced Dallas team that's been overlooked kind of all season against the explosive Edmonton Oilers. And as my friend Gino said, too much firepower for Edmonton. I like Edmonton in 5. So that obviously that can't happen. But you know, they can win this thing in 6, though, because they have that kind of scoring power. Kev, thoughts?
I think what you said summed it up perfectly. Skinner was awful game 3. You know, Edmonton, 2-0 lead after the first period on the road. You've got to somehow win that game. And at home, you've got to protect your home ice and win that game. You're up 2-0. Like I said, must win tonight, 2-2 after 1. I still think if they can pull this game out, make it 2-2, I think Edmonton can still pull this off in 6.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, listen. The way they can score, they're not out.
Overcome Skinner.
Yeah, I mean, they're not out of any of these games. They just need to get a little goaltending to get this going, you know?
Yep.
The funny part about it is Ottinger is really good. We talk a lot about Shesterkin. We talk a lot about Bob Bobrovsky. Ottinger's on that same level, if not better than Bobrovsky, in my opinion. And he's... You know, listen, the goals that were given up tonight, I mean, you know, there was a loose puck. He didn't know where it was. That's how they scored their first goal, Edmonton. I mean, it wasn't like they beat him. It was just that the puck was just sitting there and no one knew where it was. And it was just got tapped in. I mean, so it's going to be it's been a fun series so far. Playoff hockey is outstanding. It's almost like football where you can watch any two teams and kind of get into it if you want to.
Yep.
Basketball and baseball are a little bit more challenging to do that with, in my opinion. But football, number one, hockey, number two, where you can kind of just latch on, especially games that start at like 9 o'clock. You know, I'm not going to watch the whole thing, but I can watch maybe 2 periods or something and see what's going on, especially if the hockey's good and the hockey's been real good, guys.
Yep. Agreed. All right. We'll move over to the NBA. Celtics are waiting for a West champ to come out. Celtics take care of Indiana in 4. Kev, want to talk to us about the Celts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 3 of the 4 games were pretty competitive. You know, the Boston made enough plays down the stretch. Game 1, they were able to get the bucket late. You know, Carlisle didn't call for the foul. And the Celtics were able to pull that out in overtime by 5. Game 2 is the only blowout. They won by 16, and they go into Indiana. And like I said, 2 very close competitive games to watch. Boston made the plays down the stretch. You know, game 3, was it 3 or 4? I forget now. Indiana blew the 18-point lead in the second half. It was game 3. Thanks.
Game 3, they blew it. It was 18 in the first half, 12 at the break, 9 after 3.
Yep.
And I mean, they still led with 8 with 2:38 to go, and they couldn't do it.
And they couldn't pull it. They couldn't seal the deal, and Boston wins by 3. And then they come out, and, you know, good for Boston that they were able to take game 4 and give themselves 9 days off here.
Yeah.
And it gives
say about this series. Oh, I'm sorry, Kev. I thought you
I was going to say, it just gives, you know, Porzingis a chance to make sure he's healthy and ready for the finals.
Yep, I agree. Halliburton getting hurt really hurt this team, I think. I think he's a difference maker for them. Nembhard has played well, but what we've noticed in the last 2 minutes of games, there's nobody on Indiana that wants to take the shot. Like you said, Kevin, game 2 was not competitive. Halliburton went down. They just never showed any signs. And Brown went off. Brown went right off.
40.
Siakam has done all he can. Nembhard has had a couple of really good games. But the fact is, if Al Horford's going to sit there and score 25 like he did in game 3, and Jrue Holiday is a defensive stopper out there, and he's – Listen, that's the difference between what happened to the Bucks and where the Celtics are, is Jrue Holiday. He's been that big a difference maker for setting this team up. I know you like Smart. I know your son loves Smart. I'm not saying that he was bad, but Holiday gives you a little bit extra on the offensive end that Smart can't give you. And that's what makes this Boston team a little bit better than they have been in the previous couple of years. Like you said, Kev, Indy led late in every game except for game two, and they could not close it out. And, you know, they get swept. And if Halliburton's in there, do I think they win the series? No, but it probably goes six.
They win at least one of those two at home, if not both.
Yeah, I would say at least one. And they should have won game one. They just didn't execute at the end where Brown hit the three from the corner. They had that game one. They had game one. They had game 3-1. And they had a real good shot to win game four. They really just kind of pissed all three of them away. And so, the Celtics, who we all – I think I picked them at five. But, so I mean, that was only because I thought Indiana would grab one. But Kev had the sweep. Gino had the sweep, right? Did you have Boston in four?
We all had five.
We all had five?
We all had five, I guess.
All right. None of us were right.
we all thought Indiana would get one.
The one thing I'll add is that when it came down to the end of some of these games, I never thought Boston was in a position where they were going to just lose. You know, once they got in game three, especially in game three, when they came back, you know, I never got the feeling Indiana was going to come back and win this game at that point. So, all right.
Game four was interesting. Just one quick point. Game four is interesting. And down the stretch, neither team could score for a while. It was like 2 minutes without a bucket. And then all of a sudden, Boston scored those late points to just put it away.
Celtics are waiting for the winner of Dallas-Minnesota. We all kind of thought Minnesota, this was going to be their time to take over. Dallas won the first three games. The first game they won by three, the second game by one. Game three, they win by nine. And then game four, Minnesota comes back, winds up winning 105-100. Dallas is up 3-1 right now. Down the stretch of these games, the combination of Luka and Kyrie and these role players, and we said it last series too, you know, PJ Washington and these guys just hitting shots is just ridiculous. Darren?
Yeah, so you go through this series, right? Dallas up 3-1. Game one, Minnesota leads by four with 3:37 left. They score 3 points the rest of the way. 3 points. And one of them was on a foul shot late with Conley, and he missed a big foul shot where they had a chance for the tap out and didn't give him a shot. Game two, Edwards in a no-win situation passes up the game-winning shot, passes it off to Naz Reid. No, he takes the shot and hits it. He's a god. Takes the shot and misses it. He's selfish. Passes the ball to Naz Reid, and Naz Reid hits it. He's a genius. Passes it to Naz Reid, and it's like he doesn't want to take the big shot. I know he can't win in that situation, but at the same point in time, he still passed up the shot, which was a little bit weird in my opinion. Wolves led by 18 in the first half in that game, led by 7 after 3, led by 5 with 1:29 to go. Gafford made a couple of big plays, and that's kind of turned it around. Irving played well, and Doncic delivered the dagger. That three, they put Gobert on. It's like, okay, so I'm watching this game, and I'm like, why is Rudy Gobert on the court right now? There's no center that's going to hurt you. A dunk only is going to give him a tie. You take him out, you sit there and have somebody on the top of the paint, pick and roll. You sit there and you put a guy on there that can stick with Doncic, who's basically talking crap at him.
Oh, yeah.
Steps back, moves at three, and starts yelling, "You can't guard me. You never could guard me." Whatever he was yelling with a lot of expletives. I'm saying to myself, what is – and that kid is just out coaching him right now because the simple fact of the matter is it's the high pick and roll. And they were unprepared. Gobert has no shot of covering Doncic in that play.
Yeah.
Then you go to game three. Game's tied at 104, and Dallas takes over down the stretch. That game was whatever. It was crazy. End the game on that 12-3 run when the game was tied at 104. Last night, Minnesota bounced back. First game with Towns and Edwards outscored Doncic and Kyrie. So that was the difference to me. Kev?
But Towns, you're 7 foot tall. There's no way that you should be shooting 3-for-22 from three-point range over the first three games.
Agreed.
I know he likes to take his threes, but if you're 3-for-22, stop shooting. You're 7 foot tall. Get your ass in the paint. Get down low. Get some buckets down low. Please.
He can't. These guys can't stop shooting, Kev.
Steph Curry ruined this
game.
Here's
the interesting thing, though, and I know we all picked Minnesota to win this series. And
they're still not dead
if
yet.
Minnesota holds, if they hold form in game five, all the pressure goes to Dallas for game six.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely not saying that Minnesota is going to win this series, but I can see the series going at least six. I think Minnesota finds a way to win at home in game five. Dallas is, I mean, you know, Kyrie and Doncic are a great combination. Gafford's been all over the place. He's jumping on everything. Washington's been really good shooting it. I mean, they're getting a lot from the supporting cast. But I think Minnesota's got a shot, too. Naz Reid was great in game two, even though I'm making fun of the fact that Edwards passed him the ball a little bit because it was a no-win, because you'd love to see Edwards take that shot. Because, listen, one series ago, everybody's comparing him to Jordan, and now they're saying he's, you know, he's a nice young player. It's not fair. He's a really good young player,
yeah.
And if not one of the best players in the whole sport right now. So I'm not about taking that away, and I love his fire and his energy. I just want to see them hold court in game five and make this a series. And Boston wants to see that as well.
Yep. Yep.
Exactly. We want Dallas to have to work for this, in my opinion.
Yep.
Agreed. All right. We will touch on one more basketball point before we move on. And that was some sad news this week as Hall of Famer Bill Walton died at the age of 71 from cancer. Two national titles at UCLA, two NBA championships. He was a number one pick in the 74 draft. He's got an MVP under his belt, two All-Stars under his belt. I think we can all agree that injuries derailed what could have been an all-time great career, and he's still one of the all-time greats as it is. Any information you guys want to pass on? Darren?
When I think about him, again, you think about the 88-game winning streak. You think about the two national championships. The funny thing, Notre Dame beat them, you know, in that massive comeback. UCLA was up 11. They were up 11 with 3 minutes to go, but Wooden was never one to slow the game down, and they kept going. And what they did so well in that game was, you know, Shumate and Dantley and those guys, was they denied Bill the ball. He shot 12 for 14. It wasn't like he had a bad shooting game. It was just that everybody else wasn't able to help on the UCLA team. And then 2 weeks later, they went back and played a poorly, and UCLA beat them by 19. That was the only season where Bill ever lost any games, and they lost four that year. They won to Notre Dame. They got swept in the Oregons, which like almost never happened. It was like the cover of Sports Illustrated that they lost two in Oregon. Lost weekend in Oregon, I think, was the title of. I'm not 100% sure. And then they lost in the semifinal to NC State that year in the great David Thompson. Bill Walton, as an announcer, was entertaining. Did you get everything out of him every single time about all the details? Maybe not. But the storylines and, you know, just if you're a Pac-12 fan like I have been, you know, even watching last year, 10 teams from the Pac-12 should be in the NCAA tournament. I mean, he would say things that you're like, wow, they're lucky if they get four or three. And then he would say this every year, the Conference of Champions. I wrote on the post that we put on, you know, social media. I was like, I don't know if this was just like for his own, you know, sanity that he didn't have to see the Pac-12 completely dissolved and watch a season of his beloved Bruins and the rest of the conference he loved so much scattered all over the country, because I know how much it bothered him. And he talked about it, that the Conference of Champions was no longer. Bill Walton was arguably the greatest college basketball player of all time. It's either him or Al Cinder. You go either way. And the world loses, not just America, but the world loses a great ambassador of the sport, and they lose really just a Hall of Fame player at the college level, and would have been at the pro level had it not been for the knee injuries that really derailed them. Kev?
When he did a game, you knew you were listening to somebody who loved basketball, whether it was pro, whether it was college, it didn't matter. He loved the game. Yes, he was biased at times, but always in a good-natured way. You never felt like you were like, you know, Jay Billis and Duke.
No.
You know, Bill Walton was just one of those characters that you just love listening to the stories, and he could tell a story with the best of them. And
he was a pothead, Grateful Dead following guy from Oregon.
And he's gonna be greatly missed on these basketball broadcasts going forward.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
The Pac-12 at night with him and Dave Pasch was actually very, very entertaining for those of us on the East Coast that stayed up and listened to it, watched it. Again, as a guy that follows UCLA, I definitely watched a few games, well, at least first halves of a few games late at night, and I can honestly tell you that I enjoyed listening to his broadcast tremendously.
I mean, if especially as an East Coast guy, if you're watching the Pac-12 game on a Wednesday night, you're a basketball fan. You don't need to know every detail, every X and O. You want to listen to somebody lighthearted who knew basketball. Don't get me wrong. He knew his basketball. But he didn't bore you with the details of every single play.
And not just on the sports side. He was a huge activist in this world. He stood up for what he believed in. He was, you know, whatever there was a cause that he believed in, he was out there doing whatever he could. So he'll be greatly missed. Darren?
Just my favorite story of his was, so they win the national championship in Bill's, you know, sophomore year, but first year playing. So Wooden had specific rules about, you know, the length of your hair, the attire you had to come in with. And Walton's like, you know, Walton's a hippie. And he's like, I'm growing it out. There's no way anything's happening to me. And, you know, so he shows up at practice and Wooden goes over to him. And John Wooden never cursed. His biggest curse was, goodness gracious sakes alive. That was his big curse. And he goes to Walton. He goes, I see your hair's long. And Walton makes a little comment back about, you know, this is the style now, coach. And he goes, wow, we're going to miss you this year. And Walton just jumped on his bike and rode down to the nearest barber and had it all taken off. It was just one of those stories, the way he talked about it, because when he talked about Coach Wooden, you could hear the admiration, love, and joy in his voice and his heart when he talked about Wooden. And a lot of those guys had it, but Walton, it was very special to Walton. And that's the way he told that story. It knocked me out. And I also remember the one other thing was the first practice for every UCLA season on the Wooden was how to tie your shoes and put on your socks, the whole practice. And you know, so he sits there and says, oh, we're going to learn the Holy Grail. We're going to learn everything. And then basically he tells us how to pull our socks up nice and taut. Most important thing is not to get blisters on the whole practice was about how to put your socks on and how to put your shoes on properly. And he's like, what the hell? I thought I was going to learn all this stuff about the Holy Grail. And it ended up just being that, but that's the way it was. He was very regimented on what he did. And it's just hearing Walton tell the stories and Marcus Johnson and Jamal Wilkes and all these other guys that played for him were fantastic. But like we said, Bill Walton will be greatly missed.
All right. Unfortunately, we're going to stick with some bad news, as well as the golf world lost somebody over the weekend. Grayson Murray died on Friday after committing suicide. He withdrew Friday from the Charles Schwab Challenge, and later on that night, fate intervened. He wound up with 10 top 10 finishes and 141 career PGA starts. Anything to add on the passing of Grayson Murray, guys?
I think he's a guy that, you know, he admitted that he battled some of his demons, you know, alcohol abuse and mental illness and this and that. But the shame was that it felt like this was, at least professionally, the best stretch he's ever had in his career. You know, he had a win earlier this year. He won a tournament back in 2017. But earlier this year, he won, I think it was the Sony Open. And then he qualified for his first Masters, made the cut. Just a week or two ago, he qualified, made the cut for the PGA. He was up to number 48 in the world rankings. I mean, this guy seemed like he was on the upswing. And to wake up and hear the news about him, you know, committing suicide, especially, it was just like, wow, it's amazing. You know, if anybody is suffering from mental illness, somebody needs to make sure they're taking care of him. Whoever
he
it
was
is.
A kid. He was just a kid. He was
30 years old.
You know, and the whole life in front of him, and you just feel awful about that. And the other odd thing about the weekend is Riley wins it. He wins it by 5. He wins the tournament over, you know, Scheffler, who's coming on at him, and Keegan Bradley, who's usually good at these, you know, type of tournaments, doesn't always do great in the majors. And he almost withdrew because his sister had a brain, a tumor, I think, in her brain, and he almost withdrew. And she asked him to keep playing, and he won the tournament. It's just, you know, lots of anguish about that whole tournament a little bit, and just unfortunate for someone that's going through that mental illness and they can't get the help that they need, or they feel like they're all alone at a moment that, and where there's no one around. Fell ill on Friday, withdraws, and all of a sudden he commits suicide.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
The other note from golf is that all the charges were dropped against Scottie Scheffler from the incident a couple weeks ago. So hopefully we've put that.
Bring him up.
We've put that behind us. All right, we're gonna move to some. Go ahead.
One other quick golf note, only because Darren probably knows the name a lot more maybe than you, Gino. Lexi Thompson.
Yeah.
Announced her retirement. How old is she?
She got to be in her early 30s. I don't think she's that old, is she?
She's been around for 15 years. She turned pro. She started playing tournaments at 14 years old. She's 29 years old and retired.
She's retiring at 49.
God, imagine being so taken care of that you can retire at 29. Yeah, but that's some jealousy.
No, actually, I can't.
I can't imagine that.
Bunch of 50- I'll be working till lunch the day I die. I'll take the afternoon off to relax, and hopefully, I'll just die in my sleep nicely.
But it was like 29 and you're retiring. Good for her. Good for
her. And listen, you know what? She's had an excellent career. She really has. She's never been dominant, but she's been good. She's been real good. She's been consistently a top player.
14 and 15 tournaments, won a major.
She's been good.
And at 29, you know, now she can go ahead and, you know, worry about, I assume, you know, she'll want to start a family and all that sort of stuff now. And she can do that.
All right, Harrison Bucker. Whatever you think.
That should be the homemaker. That's according to Harrison Bucker. She can be the homemaker now.
Okay, and we will move to baseball. So, baseball.
It was too easy, Kevin. How to do it?
Couple of baseball points. Ronald Acuna, the reigning NL MVP, is out with a torn ACL for the rest of the year. It was a non-contact injury as he was running the bases. Braves now down Acuna and Spencer Strider. So we'll see what happens with that. The other point that came out of baseball was that one of the most notorious umpires in baseball history, Mr. Angel Hernandez, retired after 30 years. He was the age of 62. Quote from CC Sabathia in 2008 when he had Mr. Hernandez as an umpire that day. The reporter asked him, was he bad? And CC's comment was, he's always bad. He's a bad umpire. Yes, he was bad for that. Any comments on Angel Hernandez, guys?
I got two. Number one, it's bad when my 17-year-old daughter knows who Angel Hernandez is. And number two, C.B. Buckner might be the only man who's upset that Angel Hernandez is retiring.
Well, now he becomes the worst.
Yeah, C.B. Buckner becomes the worst. Thank you, Darren.
He just does. You know, I mean, listen, Angel Hernandez has been a horrible umpire for his entire 30-year career. Retiring after 30 years, and it's probably 30 years too late for most people that watch baseball. Kevin and I, and all three of us actually were talking before we started recording. I'm talking about Eric Gregg. You know, some guys are just consistently bad because of the way that they call the game, but it's consistent. There was nothing consistent about Angel Hernandez. He was just kind of all over the place all the time. And it wasn't like you could pinpoint just specifics. It was every game that you would find something of flaw with a fault with Angel Hernandez. He just was not a good umpire. The rumor was that he was actually up at the MLB offices getting critiqued, and he exploded out and ended up like walking into a closet and just stayed there because he didn't want him to admit that he was in a closet. It was like some, I don't know how true this story is, but it sounded pretty weird. I read it. I was like, and then he decided to retire because he was so upset. Again, I read that, don't know how true it is. He stayed in the closet for like 10 minutes. I don't know if that's true. If it is, that seems like it's Angel freaking Hernandez. And that's why the episode this week is called Saying Goodbye to an Angel.
You know, when he sues baseball for not being, you know, promoted to crew chief, for not working World Series games, everything else. Meanwhile, when he did get a chance to work a playoff game, you know, he's overturned three times in the first four innings on calls at first base. the most basic of play he can't get right.
Yeah, the only easy at base is third in the playoffs because you have left field and right field. You have guys down the line to help you. And yeah. It's just kind of funny. I mean, you know, second, you got a little work to do. You got a little running to do. You know, you don't have as much running to do at first and third in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just kind of funny. But, yeah, no, Angel Hernandez, you know, nothing personal but good riddance. The sport didn't need you.
All right. We will get into Yankees-Mets. Mets not playing well. Yankees playing excellent at the moment. They're very hot. They're 37-19 right now. Mets at 22-33. Kev, you want to talk the Mets first? We'll talk about the Mets.
They suck.
Don't hold back, Kev. What are you thinking?
Two words. before the doubleheader, before the game today, I should say, you know, Diaz goes on the disabled list with the shoulder impingement. I think this is maybe there's a little something in the shoulder, but I think this is a chance for him to just step back and try to figure out what's going on with him. And then during the game today, first inning, Alonso gets hit by pitch in the hand. X-rays came back negative, but he's going for more imaging, the CT scan to make sure there's nothing hiding from the X-ray, that maybe there's something broken in there. With the Mets' luck, he's out for two months and knee surgery, put a pin in there. And if they were entertaining any thoughts of trading by the trade deadline, they're gone if he's out for 2 months. And that would be the Mets' luck, the way they're going right now. The pitching staff, you know, the starters have been they've been throwing some decent games. Very few go deep. I mean, McGill threw a gem against the Dodgers in game one yesterday. 7 shutout innings for him, which is a career high for shutout innings. And the bullpen blows it, of course. You know, it's not Diaz, it's not Avino, your buddy there, Darren.
Oh, he's just awful.
And then the nightcap, you know, Quintana throws it decently enough, but they can't score. And today, Tomas Nido, of all people, supplies the offense with a 2-run home run. It's just bad right now. And there's just nothing fun to watch about the Mets right now.
Quick story. So I think it was game two. They got two hit in one of the games recently. They only had two hits in the game. And there's this the radio broadcast, Howie Rose is the play-by-play guy. And I guess they have a sponsor called the Farmer's Dog. So they have to pick out the top dog of the game. So he asked the color guy, and I can't remember his name, so I apologize.
It's a new
if
guy.
He has a dog. Yeah, and he's like, yeah, well, I had one when I was a kid. What was the dog's name? Coco. They named Coco the top dog of the game because they could not find a Met player. This is not an exaggeration of a story. This is a fact. Howie Rose did not feel like it was worthy to give any of the Mets. They had two hits, one by Lindor. I'm trying to remember who had the other one. And they decided just to give the top dog to a dog that probably died 30 years ago named Coco. So I just figured I'd share that little story.
That sums it up.
Well, here's the thing. The Mets, you need Alvarez to come back, okay? He's got to come back because he's a guy that you want to watch.
Yeah.
But right now, the best player on this team watching them day in and day out is Harrison Bader. He is. He's the only guy that's sitting in the clutch. You know, expect more from Lindor. You're not getting it. Again, with these second basemen and shortstops from the freaking National League Central. Stop taking Indians and Blue Jays. And just stop. Baerga was already declining, but you killed Alomar, and now you killed Lindor. And it's like, stop. Just stop. Do us all a favor. Just don't do it. It's like asking the Jets not to draft your quarterback at a college. Just don't do it. You're going to ruin them. Don't do it. It's the same thing. The Mets, they've taken three, you know, prized guys and driven them into the freaking ground. And, you know, I don't even know what to say. They're hard to watch right now. I'm waiting for Alvarez to come back because I want to watch him play because he's a fun guy to watch. Yeah. And I want to see Lindor and Alonso hit. But knowing the Mets' luck, like you said, Kev, he's going to sit there and have some sort of wrist injury. He'll be gone. Because you feel like this offense should be able to carry this pitching staff through. And then when the pitching staff does actually pitch well, the bullpen blows it. It's out of Vino.
There's always one part of the team costs them a game right now, every game.
I think it's all parts of the team costing them the game every game, Kev. I think you're being optimistic with the one part. It's just hard to watch, and I want them to be good because, A, I picked them to make the playoffs. B, I just think that, you know, baseball is more fun when both local teams are playing well. The Yankees are, and we'll segue to them now.
And
but we need the Mets.
And of course, one game that they've won the last week was a game that they came back, won the bottom of the ninth, and cost Logan Webb a damn win.
Yeah, your fantasy court.
My fantasy starter. Seven innings, no earned runs, no win.
You know, the Dodgers came into the series scuffling.
They lost five in a row.
And then the Mets gave them the sweep. Mets should have won game one. They could have won game two. They had no shot today.
Well, it was 3-3 in the eighth.
That's true, but they lost 10-3.
Yeah.
It's the Mets. It's the Mets. It's that bullpen. You love that bullpen.
All right. Across town, Yankees are 37-19. At this point, the pitching has just been lights out. They're going with this five-man rotation right now. There's no Gerrit Cole, and everybody's pitching in. Everybody's pitching well. Rodon, Cortez, Schmidt, Stroman, Gale, they're all pitching well. It has been an absolute pleasure to watch Soto play at this point so far. He's just unbelievable. Seeing him hit every day is just unbelievable. Judge, who started off really slow, has got 17 home runs. Soto's got 15. Stanton not far behind at 13. Judge is kind of up there in all the on-base slugging, everything up there right now. He's right at the top. It is all cylinders firing right now. Darren?
They set a record of 15 straight starts, giving up two runs or less. And the record that they broke was from 1889 or something like that. I might be off by a year. But it was like it's for forever. I mean, you know, and again, this is you know, Hill, who's pitching tonight. This is Stroman, who's been, you know, probably an above-average pitcher through his career. Nasty Nestor Cortez, Rodon coming off of a horrible year, an injury-plagued year. I mean, this is not exactly the rotation that you expected to be dominant like they are. Right now, Hill's probably been the best pitcher on this team, and that's saying something because they've all been pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And when Cole comes back, there's some questions to answer. It's going to be exciting to see. Going to see where they go with it. But, you know, listen, these are the – I know people, you know, will say, oh, you know, that's a good problem to have. You know, you don't want to pick the wrong guy either. So it's never easy to do that. But you just figure in Major League Baseball, injuries happen. So you kind of take it from there. But, you know, like you said, the offense is just clicking. Volpe's hitting the ball well. He's up back up to 290. He's been streaky, but he's been streaky good. Your boy DJ's back in the lineup. I know you're excited about that, G. You know, he's just one of those guys you root for on a regular basis. And, you know, the fact that if you don't know, Gino, but he's had him on his fantasy team. He had him for like four straight years, and now he can't stand him in the last couple. But he was one of your guys early on. And you said, Judge has torn it up. Soto's been great. Rizzo's been probably not as good as we were hoping, but on this lineup, they haven't really missed him yet.
Nope. And honestly, Verdugo surprised me a little bit, too.
I like Verdugo a lot. He's kind of a gritty kind of player.
He is a gritty player, but he seems to like hitting the clutch. I kind of like that, you know?
Agreed.
I don't really have any other major surprises with the standings at this point. Really no major changes. The team that's really hot right now is Cleveland. They're 37-18. They're 9-1 in their last 10. The Yankees, Baltimore, Cleveland, Kansas City, Minnesota, Seattle, they're all above 500. Philadelphia, Atlanta, Milwaukee, the Cubs, Dodgers, Giants, and the Padres all above 500 in the National League. From the last time we spoke, not a lot of changes in a lot of the statistical category items. Anything you want to bring up there?
Jeremiah Estrada of the San Diego Padres has struck out 13 straight people he's faced. It's a pretty impressive record.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Striking out 13 straight batters is pretty good. Also, they've taken the Negro League stats and incorporated them into the Major League Baseball stats. I know Gino's excited about this. Josh Gibson is now the all-time leading hitter at 372, surpassing Ty Cobb. Babe Ruth has been passed overall, I think, with OPS. I mean, there's a bunch of things that have happened. Again, I know everybody can't wait to mess with record books. I don't know if we have to do it. We all know Josh Gibson was great. Maybe he deserves to be on top. Maybe he doesn't. Doesn't really matter in any way, shape, or form. they're all superstars. I just always wonder where they're coming from with all this kind of stuff. That's where we sit. We'll see what happens, you know, going forward with the rest of the stats as they come out. But Josh Gibson, your new all-time batting average leader at 372. That's what I got on the MLB circuit. Kev, anything?
Nope.
Darren, anything else you want to go through? And you got a couple of things.
Yeah, tennis first. French Open underway. Nadal got knocked out by Zverev, I'm sorry, in straight sets. The 14-time French Open winner may have played his last match at Roland Garros. Again, you know, he's been the fixture there forever. But these guys are getting older. These young guys come in and they play. Yeah, Kev?
I don't know. I should have looked at this beforehand. I know the Olympics are in Paris. Are they having the tennis portion at Roland Garros again?
I would have to imagine, right? Wouldn't you think?
Because I know he's already said he's bypassing Wimbledon. He's going to focus on the clay to try to see if he can play the Olympics. Which, you know, if it's at Roland Garros, it gives him at least one more match there. But, you know, this is the last time we'll see him at the French Open, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I'd be stunned if he kept going. I mean, the injuries kind of mount up as you get older, and it's just harder to do. It makes Djokovic kind of a freak in nature. But, again, Djokovic had a couple of years off because of the COVID stuff. So he got the rest of his body for a couple of years, but these guys didn't. Him and, you know, Federer right before him, you know, starting to slow down as well. Same thing. Again, it's so hard to get into the tennis right now because there are no good Americans on either side. So you'd like to see Americans get involved, and it makes it a little easier to watch. But, you know, it's the French Open. It's a major. So we'll see who wins it.
You know, these three guys, you know, 66 majors, I think, is between them, or Grand Slams between them. And the record before that with Sampras was like 13.
Imagine
if you didn't have three of the greatest players ever playing against each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole Margaret Court argument, right?
What could their Grand Slam totals have been if they were playing in, like, a regular era?
That's the whole thing. That's like the Margaret Court thing. I mean, she didn't have to play in every tournament. She didn't, you know, all this stuff, didn't have to go up against certain players. It was a very different time. But these guys have been so dominant for so long. And you can pick your favorite, you know, you can, and you wouldn't be wrong saying this one's the best, or the third one's the best. Any one of them could be your who you thought was the best, and you'd be right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's tennis. Quick thing on college baseball. So the conference tournaments are all done, and we're starting up the College World Series. The Super Regionals will kick off. But a little human interest story that you might have heard about, might not have, about the Birmingham Southern baseball team. Okay, so Birmingham Southern is a school that is closing as of May 31st because of financial problems. This is a school that has been around since 1856 or something like that. It's been around for a long time. So their first game of the Division III College World Series happens to be May 31st, and Birmingham Southern has qualified. They qualified not only by winning that game, but they had 9 players with food poisoning, 7 on IVs, and 2 in the hospital during the game. The intriguing part of the story is they had to do a GoFundMe page to try to get $50,000 to pay for them to get from place to place. They've got $40,000 already. I think they're well on their way. And the final interesting storyline is, you remember Adam LaRoche, the baseball player, the first baseman?
Yes.
Played for the White Sox, retired a little early because there were complaints in the clubhouse about his son always being around. His son is the ace of the staff.
Wow.
Drake LaRoche has having a great year. So go Panthers. Win for a school that no longer exists. But Drake LaRoche is probably not a major league pitcher. He's 5'9". So, you know, he's playing Division III and he's 5'9". But this was the reason why LaRoche said, I'd rather spend time with my family, because there were complaints that he kept bringing his son around the clubhouse. And the kid is the ace on the staff. He's a junior. He has like a 3.2 ERA. And I just thought it was an interesting little tidbit on it. So go Panthers, Birmingham Southern Baseball, win the Division III title. Two other quick points. The Belmont Stakes Field, again, a couple of changes, okay? So West Saratoga and Batten Down was the maiden, are now out. Door Knock has been added in, and right now they're on the fence with Catching Freedom and Tuscan Gold. So right now the field is Sierra Leone, who's the 7-4 early favorite, fierceness, even though he finished 15th in the Derby, is 3-1. Mystic Dan is 5-1. Sees the Gray is 6-1. Torpedo Anna running with the boys is 8-1. Antiquarian is 10-1. Anna Marie, I think, is 14-1. Doorknock is 14-1. The Wine Steward is 18-1. And then we'll see if Tuscan Gold and Catching Freedom run in that race. I guess my last point was about, well, 2 points. NCAA basketball, today is the deadline for who's staying in the draft and who is going to go back to school or transfer or all the amazing other things that are going to happen. I could go through who it is already, but it's too much. We'll just try to give you the best players next week because not everybody has made their determinations. The one guy that is staying in the draft, I'm sorry, go ahead, Kev. I don't want to steal it. Go ahead.
Ronnie James is staying in the draft off his big 4 point freshman year.
As Fran Fraschilla put it, he's the fourth best guard on USC, but he's staying in the draft.
Yeah.
But have nothing to do with the nepotism from his father, who now there's rumor that Phoenix and Utah are trying to trade up to draft Bronny James so they can get LeBron on their squad. And my last point, NCAA came to an agreement, a legal agreement, that the Power Five teams can pay their athletes. They're going to have an upwards of $20 million a year to pay athletes.
Yep.
Based on judges' approval, so it hasn't been signed off on yet. It's just for the Power Five. There's still other lawsuits out there. This is just kind of a start, but you know, be honest with you, the death of college sports is alive and well. It's just dying a little bit more every single freaking day, in my opinion. And that's my little wrap up. G, anything you want to add?
No. I think okay. That's it.
Birmingham Southern, baby. Kev?
That suck. Otherwise, let's go.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin and Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. Talking about Angel Hernandez, who might have been the worst umpire of our entire lifetimes, and now finally retiring. The fact that he had the right to retire and wasn't fired is beyond me. Anyway, please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. You know, we post a lot on social media. Like us, follow us. Tell us what you want to hear more about. We're talking about a little bit of everything right now. We'll be much heavier into the NFL as we go forward and a little bit more baseball. Hopefully the Mets will help us out with that and make baseball more exciting. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.